Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. As the budget numbers have worsened in recent years, both the Abbott and Turnbull governments have turned to Australia's welfare bill, hoping to make savings. Labor, on the other hand, has met proposed cuts to welfare with resistance and made this area of policy a key point of difference between itself and the government. To discuss the opposition's approach, we're joined today by Shadow Minister for Families and Social Services, Jenny Macklin. Jenny Macklin, Labor has spent a great deal of effort defending the status quo on social services. How should a government, however, try to break the cycle of intergenerational welfare dependency?
One of the most important things for Labor is to pursue employment, full employment. I think all of us know that the best way out of poverty is to get work and to have a job with decent working conditions and enough hours. And so for us, rather than trying to slash unemployment benefits or family tax benefits or the pension, each of which the government is attempting, Labor's objective is to pursue faster economic growth, fairer economic growth that's spread more widely across Australia to make sure that we lift people out of poverty.
But nevertheless, it is very hard in today's economy, international economy as well as domestic economy, to get faster growth, isn't it? And also on this question of employment, we have almost full employment, if you consider 5% unemployment as full employment in the modern economy.
Well, I don't agree with that. We'll come to that.
Just on employment, the problem is casualisation, isn't it? And also that there's underemployment in many areas. Now, how would you tackle both the growth problem and the complexities of unemployment rather than just the level?
Let's go to this issue about growth first. One of the most interesting international debates that's happening at the moment is the importance of inequality and growing inequality that we see around the world, including in Australia, and the impact of that on economic growth. You've got the International Monetary Fund, the OECD, other very big international players telling us that increasing inequality is a constraint on growth. So what Labor is saying is that we want to reduce inequality, use all the different levers available to us to reduce inequality through the tax changes on negative gearing, for example, through improved social investments such as our schools policy. These are all very practical policies that Labor has to reduce inequality, to make sure that we see that reduction in inequality delivering improved economic growth and delivering more inclusive growth. That, of course, means making sure that people not only have a job but have a decent job. So to go to the second part of your question about the level of underemployment, it is a very, very big issue in Australia. And that's why I don't agree that we've got anything like full employment in this country. We've got more than 1 million people who say every week that they want to work more hours, that they're available to work more hours. They're not bludgers, as the government likes to make out. They're people who want to work. And so what that tells us is that there isn't enough demand in the economy, and the nature of working conditions needs to be improved to make sure that these people have the opportunity to get the jobs that they want.
Just on the headline figure of full employment, you challenged my 5%, and I think we're, 5.4 5.6 or 7 at the moment. What would you say is full employment in that headline figure?
I think this is the interesting thing about this debate, that we have to not just get hooked on any particular number, but when you've got more than 700,000 people on unemployment benefits, so they're people who are looking for work, you've got 1 million people underemployed, you've got around 800,000 people on the disability support pension, some of whom certainly want to be able to work or work more. What that tells me is that we're nowhere near full employment. I know there's a technical economic argument about what the level of full employment should be. I don't know that that's terribly helpful. I think I find it more helpful to look at the number of people who want to work and are available to work or want more hours, and we then have a task to both create greater demand in the economy, greater economic growth through a whole range of different levers, and also use our industrial relations system, our investment in human capital, all of these different policies to improve employment.
A report recently from one of the welfare groups pointed out the difficulty of the really low-skilled people and people with special problems and so on in getting work. We tend, when we talk about unemployment, to talk in a very macro sense about the cohort of unemployed. But how do you deal with trying to help these most disadvantaged people? We have numerous schemes over the years, but that group seems a very difficult group to be able to assist.
I think that's a really important point, not just from the point of view of the characteristics of those individuals, but that's an important issue. You have larger groups of men than women, for example, in the 50-year age bracket, for example. You've also got concentrations of people in particular parts of Australia. So it's not the case that unemployment is the same across our country. Some parts of the country are doing much better than others. We also know that youth unemployment is extremely serious, especially in some regional areas where young people... youth unemployment is up around 20% or even higher in some places. So concentrating on the particular characteristics of those groups, I think, is critical for policy. Making sure that if we just choose young people as an example, because of course we're all worried about them having a good future, making sure that they are able to stay at school, that we concentrate all of our efforts on helping them continue their education, finish their schooling, go on to some post-secondary qualification, and help them into work, whether it's through mentoring, whether it's through school-based traineeships. There's a whole range of good examples of policies that work, but you've actually got to stick at it too. I think one of the great failings we have in Australia is that policies get tried, they don't necessarily get stuck at. One of the terrific examples is a policy we had called Youth Connections, which was all about connecting young people when they're in danger of leaving school early with local employers, mentoring them, connecting them into work. It was working. Sadly, fell foul of the 2014 budget cuts.
It's probably harder, isn't it, with some of the older workers who are displaced middle-aged men who've been in factories that are closed down, the car industry, whatever. How do you cope with that group?
I think first and foremost, you never give up on a group of people, and we're going to have a large group of these people in Adelaide, for example, with the closure of the car industry, different parts of Melbourne. And what we've got to do is really get into those communities and work with those individuals, find out what their aspirations are, what sort of work would they like to do, what changes to their skills they're interested in. interested in pursuing, work with them to get the new work opportunities that most of them are desperately wanting. So my view is that these policies have to be very local. We have to work with the individuals concerned and help them back into productive employment.
We've seen, I think, in this last 3 years or so, a very divided approach on welfare. Goes back further indeed, but under this government, Labor's been quite tough in its resistance to some moves. Do you think that there is a possibility in any of these areas that you deal with to get a bit more bipartisanship? And what do you think about the investment approach which Minister Christian Porter is pursuing of looking at particular vulnerable groups like very young parents and young carers to try to stop them getting onto welfare for their life?
Sure. Maybe if I go to the first part of the question first, because I think it goes to the heart of the difference between the Liberal National Coalition and ourselves. If you go back to the 2014 budget that contained some of the most severe cuts to the age pension, to young people who are unemployed and to families, this government, or the Abbott government, I should say, wanted to cut indexation for the age pension that would have seen a cut of around $80 a week over the next 10 years to the age pension. It's just an extraordinary decision that they tried to make. And of course, pensioner groups and ourselves opposed that with great ferocity. And that is because there's a fundamentally different view between us. I don't think that we should say to age pensioners living on the maximum rate of the pension, a bit over $20,000 a year, that they should face a cut of that nature. It is unfair. And sadly, I think the Liberal National Coalition have an ideological view that the welfare system is too generous, even though the international evidence is completely to the contrary. The international evidence is that our social security system is one of the most tightly targeted in the world. If you look at the OECD, they argue that we have a sustainable social security system, unlike those in Europe. So I think it's deeply ideological on the part of this government. And no, we will not be agreeing to cuts to the age pension or saying to young unemployed people they need to wait. Well, the proposal back in 2014 was to wait 6 months before they would get any form of income support. The proposal now is they'll have to wait for 5 weeks. We don't think Australians should have to live on absolutely nothing for a period of time. It's just not the way we want to operate our social security system. So there is an absolutely fundamental difference between us.
Do you think that there's an argument that parts of the system should be more generous, for example, unemployment benefits, but other parts should be even more tightly targeted because, after all, a great proportion of older people do get some of the pension, even though we've got a superannuation system which is trying to reduce the proportion of people on pensions?
Well, when I was the minister responsible, we did in fact introduce means testing for some of the family tax benefit payments, for example, that previously under the Howard government had not been means tested at all. So Mr. Howard and Mr. Abbott had taken the view that family tax benefit Part B, for example, should go to everybody. We didn't take that view. We thought there should be a means test, and we have supported the tightening of means tests at the top of the family tax benefit system. So I don't have any disagreement with that. In fact, I would argue that's a Labor approach. But I don't agree with making life harder for those families who are living on the lowest incomes. And what this government wants to do is take more than $700 per child off those families on the lowest incomes in Australia. We're not going to agree to that. It is unfair. These families can't afford now to pay the rent and put food on the table. Why would we make it harder for them? And yet that's what this government wants to do.
Now, you brought in the government's paid parental leave scheme when you were a minister, and now there's an argument about the government's attempt to deal with what it calls double dipping between the government scheme and employer schemes. There's a compromise on the table on this. What is your view of that compromise, and do you think any agreement can be reached on the whole issue?
Well, we certainly don't want to see any cuts to paid parental leave. Australia was very late to the introduction of a national paid parental leave scheme. I think we were the second last in the developed world. The last is still the United States, and now that Hillary Clinton hasn't been elected, it looks like the United States will continue to be the only developed country in the world without a national paid parental leave scheme. The scheme that we introduced is highly targeted. It has a means test. It's paid not at people's wage, but at the national minimum wage. So it's not a generous scheme. What I'm particularly critical of, both in the government's original proposal and even in this latest suggestion that is in the media, is that it really will leave around 70,000 new mothers worse off. So take a Coles worker, somebody working at Coles. If she's working full-time, she's earning just over $40,000 a year. She'll be more than $6,000 a year worse off under this so-called compromise. Now, we're not going to agree to that. We're not going to say to Coles workers, Woolies workers, people working at Myer, people who are nurses and teachers, you're going to lose some of your paid parental leave because this government wants to cut access. That's bad for mothers. It's bad for babies. All the evidence shows that mothers and babies need to spend at least 26 weeks together in that early time of a baby's life. The last thing we should be doing is cutting access to paid parental leave.
Do you think there's any room at all for trimming the entitlements for people who are right at the top of the income tree?
In general, do you mean, or with paid parental leave? There's already a means test. We introduced a means test at the start of paid parental leave.
But these overlapping schemes, is there any case for dealing with that for really wealthy people?
Well, really wealthy people don't get it. That's the important thing to remember. They're means tested out of the scheme. The minister likes to say that there's all these women getting access to paid parental leave who earn a lot of money. The evidence from his own department is that only just over 700 women are in the top income bracket that allows paid parental leave. So given, I think, around 700,000 women have benefited from paid parental leave, we're not talking about very many at the top who are at the top of the income scale who are getting access to it. I think we have to remember too that with employer-funded paid parental leave, this is negotiated. This is paid parental leave that's negotiated as part of people's enterprise bargaining arrangements. People give up things to get paid parental leave. They might give up a part of a wage rise or other conditions, and for the government then to come in and say, oh, we're going to just take some of your entitlement away and ignore the fact that these conditions have been negotiated, I think it just needs to be seen for what it is. It's a cut to paid parental leave, and it will leave mothers and babies worse off, and also employers, in fact.
One of the major reforms that the Labor government started was the National Disability Insurance Scheme. Now, as it stands, this scheme has a number of problems in its rollout. From your point of view, how do you see that rollout? What changes should be made? Are you disappointed that problems have arisen?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's important to say that this is probably the most significant change that's happened in social policy since the introduction of Medicare. So it is a very, very big change. And at its heart, the reason that it's so significant for people with disability is that it really changes the way in which they are able to control their own lives, that they can choose the services that they want, choose who they want to deliver the services for them in a way that they've never been able to control before. So that is an absolutely fundamental change that we must never lose sight of in the face of some of these initial problems that do exist, and there's no doubt there have been. And of course, I'm as concerned about them as anyone, as sometimes I get called the mother of the National Disability Insurance Scheme, and it's something that we're obviously very, very proud of. So anything that we can do to support the government to address the problems that have arisen, some of them have arisen because of the way in which the new computer system was both designed and implemented. I understand they're being addressed. We now have a backlog of people trying to get their plans agreed and implemented. It's important for people to get those done as quickly as possible, but without losing quality control. There's going to be a big increase in the workforce demanded. In doing that, all of us have got a responsibility to make sure that the quality of services that are delivered is as high as possible. And I do think this is a big issue that still remains to be properly addressed.
So do you think that this is an area for bipartisanship in trying to address these problems rather than making it a political football?
I hope so. Well, that's certainly what I'd like because it was bipartisan. Everyone in the parliament voted for it when I put that legislation.
And for the levy.
Levy. And if you take your mind back to the timing of the increase in the Medicare levy, Mr. Abbott was the opposition leader and generally described as Dr. No, Mr. No. And
became Mr. Yes temporarily.
And he did. And he voted for it. And I think people with disability were very, very pleased that this was and continues to be a bipartisan commitment. And certainly from my point of view, I want to address the problems. On the positive side, I'd have to say there's so many people who come up to me and tell me their individual stories, sometimes throw their arms around me and say that it's just changed their lives. And I was at a early intervention place for little children in my electorate recently, and that's coming into the National Disability Insurance Scheme right now. And the parents there are just so thrilled with the improved access to speech therapy, for example, for their children who are late speaking, those sorts of issues. It's making a big difference.
Now, you're not usually associated much with factional politics in the ALP, but you are from Victoria, which is a highly factional state. You're from the left in that state. I just wonder how appropriate you think the appointment of Kimberly Kitching was as a replacement senator She's been very controversial. We've seen a motion in the Senate that even the Greens supported criticising her. What do you think?
Well, as you rightly point out in your remarks, I'm not one for getting involved on these side of things. I've been heavily focused on the huge piece of work that we did earlier this year on how to reduce inequality in Australia. And I'm not on the Public Office Selection Committee in Victoria. So these matters really have been decided by others, but I'm sure that now that she's here, she'll make a terrific contribution to the Senate, and I look forward to her doing so.
But while you don't play factional politics, some even within your own broad faction in Victoria are targeting you, and Gavin Marshall, for example, Victorian Senator, has talked about launching pre-selection contests against some of your left faction colleagues in Victoria. How concerned are you about this threat?
I'm not concerned about it because I think the people who've been mentioned, Catherine King, for example, if I can just say, I think she's an outstanding contributor. She's really led our fight against the cuts to the government's cuts to Medicare. And Andrew Giles is making a terrific contribution as one of our newer members, now an assistant shadow minister in the schools area, already very involved from a policy point of view in an area that I'm interested in, making sure that we provide extra support to children with disability at school. I'm very impressed with both Andrew and Catherine and the way in which they contribute at a policy level, and I have no doubt their excellent credentials will win the day.
And just finally, on your own future, do you definitely intend to recontest at the election? And if you do, would you hope to be in the same ministerial area broadly as you were last time if Labor was elected?
Well, I'm certainly going to contest the next election. I've just won an election with an increased majority, and you can probably hear by the way I'm responding to your questions, I feel very strongly about attack by this government on the poorest people in Australia. I've always seen my role in the parliament, which is now almost 21 years, as being one of the loudest voices for people in our country who don't have much power, who don't have a loud voice to stand up for their own interests. I've been pursuing this work on how we best reduce inequality in our country. So I've got a big agenda ahead of me. As to future portfolios, that's really a little while off, Michelle.
You wouldn't feel like a change.
As always, a matter for the leader. I'm certainly someone who would expect to stay in one of the large social portfolios. That's obviously my area of expertise, and I hope I've demonstrated over these years that I've still got plenty to contribute.
Jenny Macklin, thank you very much for talking with us today. That's all from our podcast. Thank you to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back with another interview soon. I'm Michelle Grattan. Goodbye for now.